I'm a chicken fried. And cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio.
You know what I think bothers me the most, John? Is I do kind of want to sing along inside my head.
You are singing along. Of course I know you are.
Of course I am. 7:39 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Joining us now for the first of what we expect will be many weekly interviews, Jimmy Patronis, our congressman from the great District 1, Northwest Florida. Congressman, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Have you gotten used to being called that yet?
No, not just actually, but please just call me Jimmy. I've never been a title person, but it is an honor to serve, and you know, there is a lot of good people up there. We're gonna do everything I can to bring this thing into Orlando before Memorial Day.
Outstanding. Oh, I want to share this text with you just because it was really sweet. As I had announced that you were going to be on, and somebody said, speaking of Jimmy, I reached out to him for a colleague. Not only did the congressman respond within a very short period of time, about an hour, but when my colleague reached out to one of his staff, the response was equally as fast. I told the colleague the congressman is very key on customer service. We haven't had this level of service in a long time. So just wanted to, it came from a listener. I wanted to pass that on to you. Certainly people appreciate that, and that's always been my experience with you guys as well. Let's just talk about kind of backdrop. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about backdrop. You have been in Congress now for, what, about a month? Do I have that? I guess it's April 1st when you got elected, so about a month. How is it going? Where are you living? Is your wife with you in D.C.? Tell me kind of what's it like to become a congressman.
Yeah, look, it's kind of hit or miss with all the living. Right now we're in an apartment, so I'm in a basement. But I'm not too far from the Capitol. But what's definitely a big physical curve for me is I've been used to the white oak pollen of Tallahassee for all these years, and D.C. has got a totally different type of pollen, and because different trees live up there.
Yeah.
And oh man, I tell you, it is just throwing me for a loop. So I mean, there's sleeping in a basement, you know, dealing with the challenges of Mother Nature. But then, the people are great. There's a energy in D.C., which I appreciate, and it's a young energy. It's all these young men and women that want to make a difference, and they would pay to be up there in the process. But we got a lot of really good folks that just really care about the direction of our country. They want to be a part of history. And then this last election cycle definitely created a lot of inspiration for the folks that make their journey up there to want to make a difference.
We'll get to some of the policy stuff in a second, but this is really, I'm always fascinated by transitions. And so I don't even know. I'm curious. You say you're pretty close to the Capitol. Do you walk? Do you Uber? Do you ride a scooter?
No,
Jimmy, do you strap on your rollerblades? Like, how do you transport? I'm just, you know, forming a picture.
I walk.
Okay.
It's about a 20 minute walk. See you, Theo. Love you. It's about a 30 minute walk, which isn't too bad.
Good exercise.
I'm really adamant. I've got to take better care of myself. So getting my steps in is fine. And it's a very walkable community. And what you've got an area that's called the perimeter. And this is a multi-block area around the Capitol, and that is under constant patrol by Capitol Police. So it's a safe environment, but you've also had a real change in the culture in D.C., at least from what I understand, how much more of a safer environment it's become. Because if it's a safe environment, visitors come. If it's a safe environment, restaurants are then open and doing business. So it's trying to change also the economy of D.C., and that's evident by the November election with President Trump.
Outstanding. And by the way, for people who might be wondering, Theo is your son, and he's getting out of the house right around the same time as we're doing this interview. So well done managing multiple tasks. I love that.
Yeah, except he had cereal put out for him, and he went and grabbed a bunch of junk food out of the cabinet instead and took it. So there he goes.
I love it. Hey, let's talk briefly about your committee assignments. It's a little bit different because we've been accustomed to our congressman being like on, you know, military committees. And you are on two committees, small business and transportation and infrastructure, right?
Correct. So because of the special election, you got to have a vacancy to get on there. So we're on House Armed Services Committee, was going to be with Elise Stefanik becoming the ambassador to the United Nations. She was going to leave, create a vacancy. So that was my pathway. Well, at the ninth hour, President Trump pulled back his nomination for her to the United Nations. And here's the challenge. There are a lot of what we call purple seats around the nation, where the seat could go either Republican or Democrat. Elise's seat is one of those. As long as Elise continues to run for Congress in that particular seat, it stays Republican. They love her. She does a great job. But if a new candidate comes along as a Republican, they may not have the same success. So the president's got an agenda. We've got a margin. He says, look, Elise, I need you more in Congress. So she's really taken a sacrifice for the team. She's very excited about having the opportunity at the UN. But now it looks like they're going to recruit Elise for maybe the next election cycle to run for governor in New York. So okay. Who knows? But, you know, I'll just have to sit tight till a vacancy comes up. And there's a lot of members of Congress that are not either they're retiring, not seeking election. Or they can run for something else, and that'll break Lisa's seat next year. The good thing about it is the transportation infrastructure and small business, there's a lot of juice on both of those two committees. Like with the transportation infrastructure, I've got oversight over the airlines, roads, bridges, Coast Guard. So, you know, we're putting a lot of emphasis into upgrading our air traffic control system and also bolstering the Coast Guard. So those are things we're doing in addition to about $10 billion in cuts.
Oh, okay. And I just a quick clarification. We have to take a real quick time out, but quick clarification.
Yeah, yeah.
So you are trying to go on armed services, just a matter of opening a slot up, right? Which makes sense for
correct,
the Northwest
correct,
Florida.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
There's a cap on how many seats there is.
Yep.
And right now there's just not a vacancy.
So you've already had an opportunity to be involved in some legislation, talking to Jimmy Patronis, our congressman. H.R. 973, setting consumer standards for lithium-ion batteries. Act. And my understanding is that one of the primary things this was a response to was all of those car battery fires we saw from saltwater intrusion after recent storms in Florida. Is that right?
Yeah. So, well, that, and you had also lithium ion battery e-bikes. They're all over the country.
Yeah.
And look, it's been transformational. You've got people that literally couldn't get to a job on time. Maybe they couldn't afford a car, but they could save up enough money to have $300 to buy an e-bike. So, it got people from point A to point B to get to work. So it's a fantastic technology. But what happens is when China puts out all this lithium-ion battery garbage that's not really, you know, underwriters, laboratory certified type stuff, you have fires. And a lithium-ion battery, it will not even extinguish even if you put it underwater. It will burn underwater. So we've got to create some standards in order to have safe batteries in the consumer marketplace. Batteries aren't going away. We're just going to see them continue to evolve into a better technology. But, yeah, with Hurricane Ian, man, we had like 25 EVs catch on fire all over Southwest Florida. It was a mess.
Yeah, and we've seen, you know, like the hoverboards and, as you say, the e-bikes or the scooters. You know, everything uses these lithium-ion batteries. Another reason why we need, you know, some of the rare earth minerals that, you know, the president is so interested in, whether it's in Ukraine or in Greenland or anywhere else. But, yeah, keeping them safe, that makes sense. If they're, you know, poorly manufactured in terms of, you know, safety standards, trying to remedy that. And, you know, that's one of the elements of that bill that I thought was pretty good. I figure a lot of times, you know, when you come on with me, we're going to be talking about the things the president is doing, because, of course, when the president talks, it's all the news. You were involved, but I wasn't clear on the who initiated it part. Mike Kohler, the chairman of the Escambia County Commission, was talking about this last week, that the sign change on the sailfish, it wasn't clear to me whether you initiated that request or whether you were merely congratulating him on that request. Which was it?
No, I was giving Mike a shout out. Mike is a fantastic public servant at so many different levels. And so, you know, when they change the sign on there, you know, look, I think everybody realizes and probably has the understanding that the president likes attaboys, and he likes to have his initiatives praised. And so when Mike and the commission changed the sign on the sailfish, you know, we had some fun with it and just continued to pile on that particular piece of legislation. Marjorie Taylor Greene is carrying it in Congress. I believe this week we're going to take it up for a vote to change the name to officially to the Gulf of America federally.
Oh, okay. I guess I did not realize that was even under consideration, but it makes sense that that would have to be done by Congress ultimately rather than just through an EO. And no, that's interesting. And also, Mike is pretty close to Trump, or at least historically is close to him. So it kind of makes sense. And again, just for people who might not have known this, I am adamantly opposed. I'm a Gulf of Mexico guy. I don't believe in name changes. You and I talked about that before when you were on. Yeah. You know, I love the name itself. I just don't believe in name changes. The president defunding NPR and PBS by defunding the funding corporation and telling them not to issue funds to NPR and PBS. This is also one of those things that I expect Congress will have to be involved in. Your thoughts on the defunding effort and on Congress's need to approve that?
You know, I have a problem. Like in your particular station, you've got advertisers that like your content. They understand that your content also has a listening audience that ultimately could drive somebody's buying and spending decisions. And so NPR is separate from that. They don't have advertisers, so they get this federal money. But now what's happened is the content has to me, it's kind of lost its direction. You know, call balls and strikes and be fair with your content. But if you start moving too far to the left or to the right, then you're really losing what the whole purpose of having a public access radio is. So look, I get it with the president. At the end of the day, I think a lot of the things he does is to change behavior, and he'll shoot shots across their bow, and ultimately he may try to go directly after the funding through Congress. But you know, I the last 4 years this country has been a train wreck, and I appreciate where he is seeing those issues that need to be straightened, that the reset button needs to be healed or needs to be rebuilt. That's exactly what he's doing. So this is where the executive orders are in play a lot. And this is no different. You know, this is to get, NPR and public radio's attention and PBS. But if it doesn't work, then Congress has to act. Yeah.
I thought that as many things, Trump negotiates with a threat or an extremity and then, you know, winds up what he's really trying to accomplish is something between here and there. I'm with you. I think NPR particularly has strayed, PBS in its news product also. And you mentioned, it's kind of interesting, you mentioned that the thing that people don't talk about very much is that the public broadcasting TV and radio winds up competing with commercial TV and radio for advertising dollars. They just don't call it advertising. They call it, you know, sponsorships or donations, but they still get it functions as an ad, and for them to not have to pay taxes and be,
you know,
that's an unfair intervention in the marketplace that deprives, you know, my station, the Pensacola News Journal, WEAR, of potential ad revenue that we would get from those companies who would otherwise have to compete, you know, with us. So,
yeah, and you're very sensitive about staying in your lane. You know, you've got to have that repeat listener, and you can't turn off that listener. And with NPR, they've had no safety net. I mean, they have this unlimited safety net of funding that is just, you know, left unchecked is allowed for political speech just to pollute their whole messaging. So, you know, I like things getting a shakeup from time to time. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and I also kind of see it in the same way that I think of DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, as looking to create balance on the campus. You know, the campus has so long been dominated by liberalism. I say this as a former teacher at university, that just bringing balance is going to make some people scream. But it's, you know, if it does it, then it actually winds up becoming a better place for the sharing of good ideas and good discussion. Hey, last thing, we're talking to Jimmy Petronis. Last thing for you before we go. You know, we're a very heavy veteran area. One of the things that President Trump proposed last week that gives me I just cannot explain it. I have not heard from a veteran yet that likes this idea, but I was curious if you had a perspective on this. The changing of Veterans Day to Victory in World War I Day and the changing of Victory in Europe Day to Victory in World War II Day. Jimmy, what do you make of this?
So, I've not talked to the president or his staff directly about this. You know, if on the surface to me, I think it's where the president is trying to make it clear that those wars would not have been won if it was not for the United States, and why we have a little bit more of a definition to those days, at least in how they're being now recognized. When we have Memorial Day, you know, when we have Veterans Day, those days I think are just important to think about the sacrifices. But then look, this is the other thing that the president's doing. I don't know if you've realized this, but I think in June, he is planning on having a full military parade in downtown Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a number of reasons why he wants to do it. One, he wants to create a visual show of strength that will be televised globally. I think he also wants to give an attaboy to the men and women out there and almost create an infomercial to let moms and dads and brothers and sisters and kids from all over the United States be proud of what we have that's working 24/7, 365, protecting our country. So, I think this is, again, the president has a very large part of his makeup is promotion and marketing and explaining things, and this is no different. I think he's trying to force a conversation back into place to explain the significance of these days.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And as you say, promotion, marketing, branding is, I mean, absolutely in his wheelhouse. Even going back to like the COVID, having the joint flyovers, the Blues and the Thunderbirds over all these locations and hospitals, like that is very, and the parade is very much on brand for President Trump. But even looking back at the first video that the White House posted when they went online under the inauguration, you know, when he was inaugurated, it's, yes, pro-America is 100% his brand. Jimmy Petronas, he is our congressman from Northwest Florida, District 1. Jimmy, thanks so much for taking the time with us this week and in future weeks. And I know it's a little bit inconvenient, the timing with your family getting out the door, but you know, we'll figure it out going forward. We'll talk to you next week, and have fun this week talking about NPR and PBS if that bill comes to the floor.
All right, sounds good. Y'all have a great week. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.